Here is the Cannabis B News with your host, Joe Jameson.
Hello, my listeners. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 038-710-2013. Article number 1. Former Mexican President Fox urges marijuana legalization. Take it away.
Former Mexican President Fox urges marijuana legalization. By Ronnie Cohen, Reuters. Source, Yahoo News. Former Mexican President Vicente Fox took his crusade to legalize marijuana to San Francisco on Monday, joining pot advocates to urge the United States and his own country to decriminalize the sale and recreational use of cannabis. Fox met for 3 hours with the advocates, including Steve D'Angelo, the Oakland-based executive director of California's largest marijuana dispensary, and former Microsoft executive Jamin Shively, who hopes to create a Seattle-based pot brand now that Washington State has legalized recreational use. Legalization, Fox told reporters after the meeting, is the only way to end the violence of Mexican drug cartels, which he blamed on America's war on drugs. The cost of the war is becoming unbearable, too high for Mexico, for Latin America and for the rest of the world, Fox said in English. Every day, he said, 40 young people are killed in drug-related violence. Fox's position on legalizing drugs has evolved over time since the days when he cooperated with U.S. efforts to tamp down production in Mexico during his 2000-2006 presidential term. He has been increasingly vocal in his opposition to current policies, backing two prior efforts to legalize marijuana in Mexico. Mexico's current president, Enrique Peña Nieto, has opposed legalization. But he recently said that he would consider world opinion on the matter, particularly in light of recent voter-approved initiatives to legalize marijuana in Washington State and Colorado for recreational use. In San Francisco on Monday, Fox said he had signed on to attend and help develop an international summit later this month in Mexico to strategize a path to end marijuana prohibition. Participants scheduled to attend the three-day meeting starting July 18 in San Cristobal include an American surgeon, the dean of Harvard School of Public Health and a Mexican congressman who plans to introduce a bill to legalize marijuana in Mexico this summer, Fox said. The bill, which he expects to be introduced by Mexican lawmaker Fernando Galanzaran, would legalize adult recreational use of marijuana, Fox said. Support for legalizing marijuana in the United States has been growing. 19 states and the District of Columbia have passed medical marijuana laws, according to the Pro-Legalization National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. But the drug remains illegal under federal law. Lifting the prohibition on cannabis in Mexico, however, appears to face more of an uphill battle. Mexican lawmakers have rejected previous legalization efforts and polls have shown little popular support for the idea. But Fox promised to wage what he said was a necessary battle. We cannot afford more blood and the loss of more young people, Fox said. We must get out of the trap we are in.
Article number 2. Legalizing marijuana is hard. Regulating a pot industry is even harder. I hope it gets done, though. Take it away.
Legalizing marijuana is hard. Regulating a pot industry is even harder. By Mike Kunchel. Source, The Washington Post. It's not every day that a former Microsoft executive holds a press conference to announce his new venture into the exciting and profitable world of drug dealing. But that's exactly what happened earlier this month when Jamin Shively, a former Microsoft corporate strategy manager, announced that he wants to create the equivalent of Starbucks in the newly legalized pot industry in Washington State. All this is happening at the same time that the Washington State Liquor Control Board is looking to finalize rules on the new, legal marijuana industry. And one of the major debates right now among board members is how much they ought to prevent or encourage the kind of market consolidation in which a few firms dominate the whole industry. As Chris Marr of the Liquor Control Board argued, how do you prevent a Microsoft millionaire from getting this idea and deciding that playing by the rules they're going to dominate the market? And if that is the concern, what can economics inform us about how this new market should be set up? To provide some background, voters in Washington State passed Initiative 502 last fall in a general ballot, creating a statewide legal market in pot. Unlike Colorado, which has passed a bill to expand its medical marijuana industry and make pot legally available to everyone, Washington is folding pot under regulations for the liquor industry. As such, the Washington Liquor Board has regulatory control over the new marijuana industry. As with alcohol, a marijuana firm is classified as a producer, processor, or retailer. The first question, therefore, is how aggressively regulators should try to check the market power of frontline sellers. As of now, if there is excess demand for licenses, which cost $1,000 each, they will be subject to lottery. Licenses can't be traded in a secondary market, and it is possible that the regulators will cap the number of licenses per holder. The law also requires regulation for public safety and public health. As with the tobacco industry, voters don't want firms marketing and selling pot to underage users. And public health officials are concerned about companies marketing to problem users who would like to quit or reduce their usage but find themselves unable to. If that's the case, then perhaps having pot dealers with large market power is a good idea. Economists usually consider monopolists a problem because they produce too little of a product and charge too much for it, earning substantial profits. But that could be a good thing for the pot industry. Safe profit margins mean that a firm might be less likely to compete on price for every potential consumer and also much more likely to follow the law. Yet people involved with the Washington law have two main responses to this. The first is that firms with market power could go outside the market and use their extensive profits and influence to exert political power. The idea is to prevent the retail industry from becoming so large that they have enough wealth and power to roll over anyone trying to enforce, expand or update the public health-focused rules that are designed to protect the public's health and safety, says Roger Rothman, a University of Washington professor and author of the forthcoming book Marijuana Nation. Second, consolidated firms may that they themselves pose threats to public health. If a firm has market power, the profits they get from selling above market costs means that they can have a bigger marketing department, says UCLA public policy professor Mark Kleiman. In the real world, spending here will increase their market share by creating additional problem users. This, combined with lobbying efforts that will rival the alcohol industry in terms of avoiding taxes and adjusting the rules, is a major problem. A third argument comes from University of Chicago economics professor E. Glenn Whale. He argues that long-term players who have market power have an incentive to get people addicted. A monopolist, in particular, has a big incentive to advertise to get people addicted over the long term, as they are sure to reap all those rewards. If a marijuana firm has a monopoly, then the financial gains of turning someone into a heavy, problem user of a product rather than a specific brand will all go to that firm. A market with smaller, fragmented firms with greater turnover would be a check on this dynamic. Both Whale and Kleiman argued that Washington should consider bolder ideas to regulate the industry. Whale suggests some sort of mandatory turnover policy to discourage firms from turning people into problem users. Another possibility, which Kleiman considers, is to create a state-run non-profit retail firm that has no interest in creating problem users or expanding the market. Given that pot is still illegal at the federal level, this isn't likely to happen. Market consolidation is also an issue when it comes to a firm's vertical structure. Under Washington state law, if a firm is a retailer, it could be a producer as well as a processor. This is meant to fragment the vertical chain of production, and it contrasts with Colorado's system, in which dealers are required to grow 70% of what they sell, as that is how the medical marijuana system works. Another related economic issue is the location of pot retailers. The law in Washington, as currently structured, requires pot retailers to be at least 1,000 feet away from a school, daycare facility, playground, teen arcade game center, recreation center, transit center or library. Though this may sound minor, in practice it means that it will be very difficult to put pot retailers in dense population spaces. Retailers might be limited to industrial or largely depopulated areas. That could force what economists who study spatial models of economies call the agglomeration model, is when certain kinds of restaurants all cluster together to create an area people go to for certain goods. As Whale notes, often ethnic restaurants cluster into neighborhoods so that people can find the best places, creating ethnic neighborhoods. Do we want a pot town to grow up in our cities? Perhaps not, but that is the logical consequence of forcing dealers away from a convenience model. Kleiman thinks the main issue with regard to pot retailers' ultimate location has more to do with advertising and discretion than anything else. An alcoholic trying to quit drinking will pass by alcohol in bars, billboards, and grocery stores. That person uses up a lot of emotional energy always having to say no. Instead of focusing on 1,000 feet within certain buildings, the bigger issue Kleiman emphasizes is whether storefronts and signs aggressively advertise their product. It's important to get these issues right because they interact with the three background constraints on this new market. The first is the black market, while the second is the legal medical marijuana market. For some reason, the medical marijuana market won't be taxed, while the new legal market will be taxed around 25%. The black market is, of course, not taxed at all. Note that if the price goes too high, or if the location restrictions prove too inconvenient, pot consumers might just stick with medical marijuana or the black market. State lawmakers are currently trying to get the medical marijuana market folded under the same regulations that the Liquor Board is creating for the legal pot market, and Mark Kleiman notes that police may need to escalate crackdowns on illegal distribution as they legalize the market. A third constraint is the federal government, which enforces laws that still make pot illegal. If legalization is seen as a disaster, it is possible that the federal government will move to shut down the process by preempting state law. But even if it doesn't, background laws will probably hurt the scale and efficiency of pot retailers. As Jack Finlaw explains, since marijuana is banned at the federal level, new pot retailers often cannot conduct their businesses through banks. They also cannot deduct business expenses from their federal taxes. It is possible the normal interactions between businesses that allow them to thrive, things like having a legal bank account, won't be immediately available. Markets are constructed through laws and regulations, and the market for pot that is being created in Washington state is no exception. The regulators see how the consolidated alcohol industry is able to avoid taxation and accountability and are determined to avoid these problems in the new pot industry. Thus, this market may help economists understand a crucial role of regulations that has lapsed in recent decades, the role of government in curbing the excess power of the private sector. Mike Contrell is a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, where he focuses on financial regulation, inequality and unemployment. He writes a weekly column for Wonk Blog.
Article number 3. Hemp in Wisconsin. Take it away.
Hemp in Wisconsin. A perfect climate and soil for growing marijuana. By Joseph S. Diedrich. Source, The Washington Times, Communities. Wisconsin has a rich history in hemp cultivation. The state's soil and climate are ideal for the growth of the crop. Unfortunately, due to federal regulation, hemp cannot be grown in the state, or in any other state. Hemp was first planted in Wisconsin in 1908. Over the next four decades, the state's fertile South Central region proved to be a favorable location for cultivation. For many years, Wisconsin stood behind only Kentucky in terms of hemp acreage. Granted, much of the production of hemp in the 20th century was dedicated to wartime use. The military employed hemp for a variety of purposes in both world wars. L.H. Dewey of the USDA once stated that Wisconsin hemp is now used in sewing the shoes worn by American soldiers, and hemp fiber is at the present time the only suitable fiber available in sufficient quantities for this purpose. It is also used as cordage in shipbuilding, and hemp tow is the best available material for caulking vessels. Although hemp cultivation all but ceased by the late 1950s, criminalization did not take full effect until the passing of Controlled Substances Act in 1970. Since then, many novel uses for hemp have been discovered and developed. Hemp can be used in the production of paper, construction materials, insulation, geotextiles, and even foodstuffs. The plant is also promising from an environmental standpoint. In comparison to cotton, the amount of herbicides and pesticides required to grow hemp is negligible. When Canada lifted a 60-year-old ban on hemp cultivation in 1998, the nation experienced positive effects almost immediately. According to Dr. Dave West, a prominent plant breeder and hemp historian, the Canadian success has demonstrated the usefulness of hemp seed as well as fiber. The Canadian industry is benefiting mostly by the seed. The biggest products in Canada are in the nutritional area. You've got energy bars that are being made with hemp. You've got the virgin oil pressed, good for a lot of things with its omega-3s. It's like fish oil, gives you the same stuff. It's got a lot going for it in the nutritional area. Many states, North Dakota, Hawaii, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Oregon, California, Montana, West Virginia, and Vermont have legalized hemp cultivation within their borders. Yet little has changed. Cultivation will not become widespread until the federal ban is repealed, assuring farmers that their actions will not result in legal turmoil. Those concerned about hemp's relation to marijuana need not be. The active substance in marijuana hat gives it its mind-altering power, what makes people high as THC. On average, plants used for drug purposes contain around 7% THC. Industrial hemp, on the other hand, has a THC concentration of less than 1%. Writes West, hemp fiber had no potential to be diverted into the recreational drug market. Marijuana is defined as the flowering tops of the hemp plant. In truth, it is the flowering tops of female, non-fiber cannabis sativa L varieties from equatorial regions. Fiber hemp never had psychotropic potential. The economic possibilities of hemp cultivation are not limited to farming. The integration of an essentially new material into the productive world would also unlock the potential for growth in manufacturing, warehousing, distribution, and retail. And of course, that growth would be accompanied by new jobs. Perhaps the greatest productive potential lies in hemp's usefulness as specialty products and in niche markets. Whether it could ever become as ubiquitous as cotton or flax is doubtful, but certainly not impossible. Of course, growers of cotton and flax have an interest in keeping any competition at bay. Powerful, determined lobbying efforts should be expected to contest legalization endeavors. Maybe legalizing hemp would not change anything. Maybe no one would grow it. Maybe no one would have any use for it. We can only know for sure, however, if the possibility of cultivation exists. There seems to be no legitimate reason not to permit a hemp market. The promise of a nascent, or rather, renewed hemp industry should not be underestimated.
Article number 4. New push in Florida for medical marijuana. Take it away.
New push in Florida for medical marijuana. By Zach Anderson. Source, Herald Tribune. Kim Russell is not a hippie. A devout Christian, Russell homeschools her children and drives them to play dates in a minivan. The 42-year-old is treasurer of a stay-at-home moms group and a member of her local Republican executive committee. She does not own any tie-dye clothes. Still, the bumper sticker on Russell's Chrysler Town & Country can draw interesting looks. Passing drivers sometimes smile or give her a thumbs up when they read that Russell wants to make medical marijuana legal in Florida. The issue has been an obsession since shortly after Russell's father was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease and she learned the drug may help control the symptoms. Russell cashed out her retirement account and took on a second mortgage to finance a petition drive in 2009. She went to speaking engagements in pearls and a suit. It was the second push for a medical marijuana amendment in Florida in a decade. Like the first, it failed for lack of resources. But Russell and others are betting the third time is the charm. They have reason to be hopeful. This month, medical marijuana proponents are starting the most organized effort Florida has ever seen to enshrine doctor-approved cannabis in the state's constitution. Unlike past petition drives, this one will be well-funded. Personal injury lawyer John Morgan, famous for his For the People television and billboard ads, is pledging to do whatever it takes to pass the referendum next year. Momentum has been building across the country, with 19 states and the District of Columbia approving medical marijuana. Whether Florida is ready to become the first southern state to join that group remains unclear. The bar for constitutional amendments is high, successful campaigns are expensive, and the petition drive has been slow to get going. No signatures have been gathered yet, and nearly 700,000 are needed by February 1. Meanwhile, critics are taking aim, pledging to challenge the referendum in court and in the court of public opinion. They argue full-blown legalization is the real endgame and the benefits of medical marijuana are oversold. Some wonder if the campaign is more about electing Democrats in next year's election than helping sick people. Russell, a libertarian-leaning Republican, says the issue is not about politics for her. It's freedom and it's also compassion, she said. The activists. A handful of activists have championed medical marijuana in Florida over the last decade, keeping the issue alive in the face of political hostility or indifference, Manatee County residents Robert and Kathy Jordan are among the leading voices on the issue. The Jordans were in the spotlight recently after Manatee Sheriff's deputies confiscated 23 marijuana plants from their parish home. Confined to a wheelchair, Kathy Jordan smokes marijuana cigarettes daily to alleviate the symptoms of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or Lou Gehrig's disease. Prosecutors dropped the case after the Jordans argued medical necessity, but the couple worries about future legal actions. The Jordans still have a newspaper from March 2, 1998 featuring a picture of them collecting petition signatures on the causeway heading to Anna Maria Island. Most people ignored them. People would ride by and give you the peace sign but they wouldn't sign, Robert Jordan said. We sat there for days, Kathy in the wheelchair, but people wouldn't sign the paper. The people who did stop, most of them had sick people in their family and realized it was a medicine. That personal connection is what unites many people who strongly support marijuana for medical use. Port Charlotte resident Patricia Montgomery, 69, said she saw how marijuana helped a quadriplegic friend. It bothers Montgomery that her friend's wife, a woman in her 60s, has to risk getting picked up and put on the clink to help her husband. It puts people in a very bad situation when they should just be able to get a prescription, said Montgomery, a semi-retired physical therapist. Morgan said he, too, was convinced of marijuana's medical efficacy after seeing the drug help his dying father, who was stricken with esophageal cancer and emphysema. It was a very painful, stressful death and it gave him relief, Morgan said. Morgan's financial support and political connections are described by many activists as game-changing. Pros take over. Russell had no political experience when she formed People United for Medical Marijuana in 2009. She took her petition to concerts and other large events but never came close to gathering enough signatures. I was naive, no doubt about it, she said. Russell was struggling to gain traction when political consultant Ben Pallara contacted her. Pallara was Hillary Rodham Clinton's Florida fundraising chairman in 2008. Last year, he ran a federal super PAC supporting Democratic U.S. Senator Bill Nelson. When the election cycle ended, Pallara used some of the leftover money for a medical marijuana poll that showed 70% of likely voters favored the issue. He showed the results to Morgan and the attorney agreed to provide financial support. Pallara asked to take over Russell's group. She agreed. They bring professionalism, organizational skills, money, all the connections, just knowing how the political scene works, Russell said. Renamed United for Care, the group has an attractive website and little else. Most of its efforts have gone toward crafting a petition that can withstand a constitutional challenge based on Florida's single subject requirement for ballot initiatives. The campaign. Florida law requires constitutional amendments to focus on a single issue. Setting up a new regulatory framework for medical marijuana will touch on many aspects of state government, but Pallara believes it will pass legal muster. We feel like we've drafted it so there's only a single substantial impact. He said of amendment language, which was submitted to Florida's Secretary of State for approval last week and is expected to be finalized and available for petition signatures within days. Because opponents of medical marijuana often point to states like California, where loose controls have led to a free-for-all of clinics and patients with dubious ailments, considerable time went into crafting language calling for a tight regulatory system in Florida. Explaining all of that succinctly in the 75-word summary and 12-word title that will appear on the ballot is also critical. The actual amendment is 2.5 pages, but most people will not read it. Those 12 words and 75 words are extremely important, Pallara said. The emphasis on the ballot language has slowed the campaign start. With less than 7 months to collect signatures, money will be critical. Upwards of $3 million is needed to pay signature gatherers and much more for advertising. The campaign raised $193,167 between January and March, with the bulk coming from Morgan. Second quarter fundraising reports are due Wednesday. Pallara said they will show results similar to the first quarter. The big fundraising push begins this week. Most of our focus has been on drafting the new petition, Pallara said before predicting a huge third-quarter fundraising haul. Morgan has agreed to keep his checkbook open, but he is also hitting up other deep-pocketed sympathizers. Some very high-profile national people have agreed to contribute, he said. Yet as the campaign gains momentum, the involvement of Morgan, Pillar and other Democratic activists has raised concerns that the referendum is more about politics than patients. Political animal. After 15 years of activism, Robert Jordan has been laughed at and written off by a lot of politicians. This year, Republican lawmakers refused to hear a medical marijuana bill named after his wife. So Jordan praises Morgan for bringing attention and resources to the issue. But the disabled Vietnam veteran also worries about ulterior motives. Morgan is a political animal who may be angling to help his friend Charlie Crist, the former Republican governor who worked at Morgan's law firm after leaving office, regained the governorship as a Democrat, Jordan said. Come on now, a blind man can see what he's doing, Jordan said. Nothing brings out the liberals and the independents like this issue. Crist recently spoke in favor of medical marijuana, but Jordan is skeptical, noting his earlier tough on crime, chain gang Charlie reputation as a state lawmaker and attorney general. Jordan is also worried that opposition to the issue could grow if it is perceived as a ploy to help Democrats. It should be a bipartisan endeavor, he said. Morgan's going to make it a political issue and Republicans are going to dig their heels in, Jordan said. Morgan denies any hidden political agenda, saying he did not discuss the issue with Crist beforehand. He believes the referendum will have bipartisan appeal, noting it is a rare point of philosophical agreement with his conservative wife. My wife has spent most of our marriage canceling out every single vote I've ever made and we finally agree on something, which is medical marijuana, he said. Social conservatives are already lining up against the issue, though. So are anti-drug groups. We think it's just a very, very bad idea, said Colvina Fay, executive director of the St. Petersburg-based Drug-Free America Foundation and the organization's lobbying arm, Save Our Society from Drugs. Founded by influential Republican political donor Mel Sembler, Drug-Free America organized opposition to the medical marijuana petition drive in Florida in the late 1990s. The group has waged similar campaigns around the country in recent years. Faye says she will challenge the referendum at every step. She hopes to get it thrown off the ballot. If it survives, Faye will make sure Floridians hear that marijuana is a toxic weed. She also plans to attack the petition drive as a pretext for full-blown legalization, which only 40% of Floridians support according to the Polara Commission poll. People with private agendas that want to be able to get high and do it within the law, that's not what truly sick people deserve, Faye said. Many medical marijuana advocates do believe the drug should be completely decriminalized, but Russell is adamant the referendum is not a stepping stone. Russell's 67-year-old father is doing well. His tremors have not kept him from working. But after hearing so many stories of people suffering, Russell is committed to seeing the campaign through. It's very personal for all of us, she said.
Article number 5. High Flying Flag. Stars and stripes made of hemp to fly over U.S. Capitol. Of course it should. The most durable textile in the business. Take it away.
High Flying Flag, Stars and Stripes Made of Hemp to Fly Over U.S. Capitol. By the AP. Source, New York Post. An American flag made of hemp is flying over the U.S. Capitol on Independence Day, and the flag belongs to a Colorado man who supports the crop. Democratic Republican Jared Polis of Colorado brought the Colorado's flag made of hemp to a recent farm bill debate. The flag will be flown over the Capitol on July 4, then returned to the man. Industrial hemp looks much like marijuana but does not have its psychoactive properties. Federal law prohibits growing hemp, but not importing it. Historians say the first American flags were made of hemp, which was raised by George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Polis successfully amended the federal farm bill last month, allowing farmers to raise industrial hemp. But the bill ultimately failed. Reps. Thomas Massey of Kentucky and Earl Blumner of Oregon also sponsored the hemp farm bill.
All right, thanks everyone. That's all I have for this week. Until next week, have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your minds. Now, go pollinate the world.